With inspirational guests from across the world, this is Inspire Radio.
You're listening to Inspire Radio. We love to bring you some inspirational interviews and inspirational stories. Just as you listen to this, let me just ask you a question. How do you feel? Now, that may be hard to describe, but maybe if I said choose an emoji to show how you feel, that might be a little bit easier. And it's a pleasure to be joined on the line by Libby Steggles-Gin, the emoji coach. How are you, Libby?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. And I gather you've had a wonderful afternoon.
Yes.
Yeah, but you've been enjoying a relaxing massage, I understand.
Yeah, I did. I decided to book myself in for a massage, and yes, the energies are quite fraught at the moment, and I just thought, right, I'm just going to slot. I was working this morning, had this afternoon, and I've slotted it in.
Oh, wonderful. Always nice to make time for you, isn't it, really?
Very important.
Before we explore the world that you are in now as the emoji coach, I'd love you to share a little bit about your story, because people often listen to this program and the interviews I do, and they think everything has happened, like, I won't say instantly, but everybody becomes a great success in what they're doing straight away. But your story is really interesting. Would you like to share it with us?
Yeah, my story, it is interesting, isn't it, how people think it's happened overnight. No, I mean, it's taken me quite some years to get to where I am, and, well, 48 years to be precise. And my story starts from when I was a little girl, and I was quite a shy little girl, didn't have a lot of confidence, and felt quite different, really, to other children. I was what you call a sensitive child, which I don't like that word, sensitive child. Well, I think sensitive children are beautiful, which I will get on to. So my immune system was very low, so I was poorly for quite a lot of the time. If there was something going around, you can guarantee that I would catch it and get it worse. So I was known as the poorly sensitive child, little girl, really.
Right.
Nice.
Nice.
So when I was getting a little bit older, I would say in my teens, I became unwell. I felt unwell and had no energy and was feeling quite down. Now, looking back at it now, we can say that I was in depression. Mm-hmm. I was depressed. But at the time, nobody knew. Nobody knew what was wrong with me. Didn't know what to do with me. And I ended up having 3 months off school because I just couldn't get out of bed. And I went to the doctors, I went to see a counsellor, and nobody could quite get to the bottom of it. They wondered whether I'd had glandular fever, and that's what, you know, triggered this slowness. But it wasn't. It was all to do with all that was going on around me in, you know, my family life. Mm-hmm. And in the end, they appointed I can't remember whether it was a psychologist or a psychiatrist.
Right, okay.
But he came to see me, and he came to see me at my house. Now, I was in bed, so I was in my bedroom, my territory, my safe space, and he came in to see me. And he'd also spent time talking to my mum and dad as well. And he sat beside me, and I didn't like the feel of this man, so I'd gone very, withdrawn and inside and switched off from him. And I remember him leaning over and nipping my hand, which was to see, you know, I suppose, if I reacted to it. My mum sat at the end of the bed, so I could see my mum very clearly. And he just said to me, you know, really and truly, Elizabeth, use my Sunday name. He said, you have got your mum and dad wrapped right round your little finger, haven't you? And he said, you've got them exactly where you want them to be. So my mum, I could clearly see that my mum was upset. She was crying. And the guy said that if I didn't get out of bed and go back to school, then he would take me away from my parents and put me in a home, a children's home.
My word. Right. Right. There's a guy that's making a great connection.
Yeah.
Yes. Ooh, right.
Yeah. So, and he was deadly serious. He was deadly serious. And so he told me that the following week he wanted me to, my parents, to bring me down to see him in his hospital, his place. And again, you know, if I didn't do that, then the repercussion would be he would take me away and do whatever. And so I went with my mum and dad. And it was a Friday mid-morning. And he said that, well, you've got out of bed and you come to me, so you can go back to school this afternoon. And he ordered my parents to drop me off.
To drop you off?
Yeah, just drop me off, you know. Bearing in mind I'd had 3 months off school. And he said, again, if you don't do that, then I will take you in, you'll be put into care. You'll be put into a children's home. Because, you know, you're breaking the law, you have to go to school. And the fear in me, not so much of the man, funnily enough, but the fear of going back into society and being pushed that quickly, because I'd lost so much confidence. It was just raw. And I remember sitting in the back of the car, driving down Round A Road, getting closer and closer. And I just said to my dad, who I wasn't particularly close with, I didn't have a great relationship with my dad. I remember just saying to him, please, please don't take me back this afternoon. I just can't, Dad, please don't. And he was very quiet, very, very quiet. And I said, I'm begging you not to take, I just can't go back. So he said, well, will you promise me you will go back on Monday morning? I said, I absolutely promise you I will do so. And I did.
And you did.
And I did. And I totally withdrawn from everybody. I used to go and hide in the classroom on a lunchtime, keep away from everyone. It was so overwhelming, but I did it. I did do it. So I wasn't put into a home.
Yay! Yay. Wow.
Yeah.
I felt quite emotional when you were telling that story, actually, there. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm just picturing you sat in the back of the car pleading with your dad, you know, having a daughter of my own as well. And God, that must have been a hell of a conversation and a feeling to have.
It was. I mean, as I was talking about it, I could feel it, because the fear of going back into a place for an adult when they're feeling like that, but for a child, because I was 13. 13 years old. So, you know, and how am I going to cope? And I'd put weight on because I'd been eating normally, but I'd been in bed for 3 months. So I'd put quite a lot of weight on. And so, of course, when I went back to school, the first thing that happened was, oh, Steg's, look, you know, she's had a baby. Oh, goodness me.
Oh, my word. That was the rumour. Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was the rumour. So I then had all that to face and got through school, still having time off, and left school. And then I became depressed again around my 20s, I would say. Funnily enough, when I was feeling really happy, and yeah, the depression came on. Yeah, I was feeling really happy in my life, and the depression came on.
What was that about then? Was that some subconscious thing about doubting yourself that you shouldn't be happy? What was going on there, do you think?
Well, now I've learned how the body works. When you are in your stress and survival mode, you quite often you don't feel what's going on in your body. And when you then let that go. So I'd let that go, and I was feeling so happy. Symptoms that I'd suppressed and pushed down, all the emotions that I'd suppressed and pushed down, started to come up. because every time I tried to express how I felt, I was stopped.
Right.
In some way, I was stopped. And so I just pushed them down. I pushed all the sadness, all the emotions down as far as I possibly could to cope and to cope with life and to get on and to go back to school and to feel like I fitted in. And so when I you know, got to a point in my life where I felt really happy, it, vroom, they all just came up again.
Wow. Plumbing egg. Right. God. So how did things change for you then, Livia? Where did you become a little bit more confident then, and how did that happen?
I became a hairdresser and I was running my own business, and I was in a car accident, and it was a minor car accident, mm-hmm. and I damaged my left wrist. So it then became, they thought I'd fractured a bone in my left wrist, and so I couldn't work. And it was just before Bonfire Night, actually, in 1994. And so I'd got all my clients booked in for Christmas to do the hair, and I couldn't do them because of my injury. So my brother was in Australia, and I'd just come out of relationship, so I was heartbroken and devastated about that as well. Couldn't work with my clients, so couldn't carry on with my business because of this injury. My brother was in Australia, and I just, again, was feeling depressed. And I woke up and I said to my mum, "I'm going to go to Australia." And she's like, "Oh, okay." And I went, "Yeah, I'm going to go and see John." So, and off I went.
Right.
To Australia. This shy girl with no confidence got on a plane and travelled by myself, got to Australia. My brother was at the other end, and life became a party, you know? It just became a party. I met some incredible people that I don't think they actually realise how much they are in my heart still, because they were a massive part of, you know, a big transformation. And I was still quite shy when I got there, and I went on a dive.
Okay.
I went on my first ever dive, and something happened to me when I was on that dive, you know, swimming down the bottom of the ocean and seeing all the fishes. And some of my friends actually say, my Aussie friends, you know, you went down one person and you came back a very, very different person. And I came back up to the surface like this me, you know, like, wow. Woohoo, this is me. And I was partying and I was just having a whale of a time. It's like part of my inner child woke up and had fun, and I just felt amazing.
Sounds like a massive release, and you're away, and
yeah.
Letting the inner child out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how many of us don't do that, including me at times?
Yeah. Oh, well, it's part of my regime now, I tell you, Steve. Yeah. I tell you. So when I stayed in Australia, I was actually wanting to live out in Australia, but my arm was getting worse. So I decided to come back to England, get my arm sorted, and then get my residency and go out and live in Australia. Mm-hmm. That was the plan. But it unfortunately, it took a turn for the worse again. So it's like a roller coaster. And I had some simple surgery on my wrist because the tendons had tightened up. And the simple surgery was to release the tendons. And unfortunately, I got a condition of chronic pain. So I woke up from the surgery and I got chronic pain. And again, the consultant hadn't heard of this, you know, and it was very rare. Now, you know, they know all about it now. And yeah, so I got chronic pain and I wasn't able to work. I wasn't able to go to Australia. And I spent around 16, 17 years living with chronic pain in my arm.
16 to 17 years at this point, Libby, did you actually begin to wonder what was going on here? Why does this keep smashing me in the face? There I was, I'm having a great time in Australia, I'm partying, I've really got my inner child self, and I've come back and somewhere or something, hey, whatever you want to call it, is just done this. Yeah. What's going on?
But if you remember, you know, the belief or that I was branded as a child as the poorly child.
Yes.
So, you know, that belief must have been running in me at some level. And maybe, yeah, you know, that lack of self-worth, did I deserve to have that happy life and all of that. Unbeknown to all of that, though, because I was so... I didn't tell anyone about my pain. I'd never complained about my pain. I couldn't use my left arm. But if somebody even touched it, I wouldn't even say ow or tell them to get off or anything. I was a very silent sufferer. Very, very silent.
So once again, you're holding these things in again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah.
And I had lots and lots of horrific treatment that... could have worked and could have relieved my pain, which is why I put myself through it. And a lot of medication. So I was numb on medication, you know, morphine, anti-epileptic tablets to try and calm the nerves down, you name it. I was on it. And then I had what was called a spinal cord stimulator fitted, which is like an internal TENS machine.
Right. Okay.
And I had that one of those fitted. And I'd met my now husband as well. So he met me not working with all this pain. And we decided that we wanted to have children. And they actually said to me that I would be a guinea pig having this spinal cord stimulator fitted, because it wasn't known whether or not you could have children with this device.
Really?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
whether it would be a risk to the baby or not, whether it could cause miscarriage. And I just said, well, do you know what? I could have a miscarriage whether I've got this or not. So I want to go ahead and do this. So I had my little boy, well, he's now a teenager, Cameron, and it was great. And because it was successful, I then started to talk to other women who were thinking of or wanted to have babies with a spinal cord stimulator, but were really fearful of doing it. So I used to talk to them and share my experience, and they went on and had babies with this device. So that was really lovely. So I then decided I had another one fitted, which was that in Cardiff, actually, which was better for my arm pain. It was a wonderful man, one of the top neurosurgeons in the country, who designed one for specifically for arm pain. So he refitted one of those for me, and I decided that I wanted to go back into work. I wanted to do something, and I wanted to perhaps work with children, but I wasn't sure how. And then I saw this coaching weekend, and somebody said to me, you'd make a great coach. So I looked into it, went on this free coaching weekend, and never looked back, really. Just went ahead and became a coach, and just absolutely loved doing what I was doing. And then in 2012, we just moved house, and I was walking just through the bedroom, and my back went. Just totally, my back just totally went.
Here we are again. You've got something that you love. Here we go again.
Yeah. Here we are again. So my back went, and I was in a lot of pain, a lot of pain. I ended up going to A&E, and they didn't even examine me or look at me, and they said, oh, your split disc and da-da-da-da. And so, yes. Went down the route again of starting to take the tablets, the painkillers, and I got very attached to tramadol. Very, very attached to tramadol.
Very attached.
I liked tramadol, which wasn't good. And I remember just sitting next to my husband, and I said, I can't do this anymore, and I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to go down this route of painkillers, of dealing with my pain like I did with my arm, because I've moved on from there. I'm a different person from there. So he's like, well, what is it you want to do? And I said, well, you know, there's somebody that, well, there's two people who deal with pain. They look at trauma. They see pain as emotional trauma. Mm-hmm. So, and he's like, oh my goodness me. And I found somebody actually in down south, all the way down south. Mm-hmm. And so my husband's like, why can't you be like everyone else and just go and have a spinal block and this, that, and the other? And at the same time, he was sorting me out, looking to how he could get me down to see this man, Jonathan. So I went down south, and Jonathan taught me all about emotional pain. Basically, if we have physical symptoms, how there is an emotional link mm-hmm. there. And he said that my back was actually to do with my arm and the pain in my arm. And he said, when you don't listen to your body and you try and mask it, it will come out in a different area and it will keep on coming out. And he just said, if you're not careful and you don't listen to your body, what's going to happen? What else is going to happen?
What else is going to happen? Yeah.
For you to go, right, I'm listening now. So I worked with him for some time and he really, really helped me with my pain. He released the pain doing what we did. And I am forever grateful for Jonathan and how he helped me. And it just, I got more and more into clearing myself and my trauma, all the childhood trauma, finding different avenues and different ways and different tools. And I became totally pain-free.
Wow.
Totally pain-free.
That's chronic amazing.
Pain gone. I can use my left arm. And yeah, if I have any niggles or anything, I clear it. If a client comes to me now with something, we can clear it, get them on the right track. And it gave me that real understanding of actually, wow, yeah, this is all my emotion that I have suppressed from growing up.
Yeah.
And it's physically coming out in my body. And the chronic pains that I had is apparently one of the most complex conditions to clear, but I did it.
Well, you did it.
I did it. I am living proof that it can be cleared. And so in September this year, I had my device taken out because I've been free of pain now for like 6 years. And I went to the NHS and said, I'd like you to take my device out for me, please.
Now, let's just hold that moment. Let's just hold that moment for a minute, because I'm just putting myself in the place of the consultant now. What was their face like when you said that?
He was like, why? Why would you want to do that? Because you can have the device in you until you die, basically. And I said, well, I don't want it in me until I die. I'd like it taken out. It's a battery inside my body. So energetically, it's not good for me. I use the word energetically, which was crikey a little bit, you know.
But I was going to say, where did he go with that one, then?
Yeah, well, he said, well, there is a risk. If you have this device taken out, especially because the electrode was actually placed in the bone at the top, the spine at the top, all the way down the middle of my back into my hip where the battery was. Right. And he was telling me, you know, that there is a risk. And I said, well, there was a risk putting it in. And he said, but you had your pain to balance that out. And I said, well, I've got my well-being to balance this out, and I want to have it taken out. So I did have it taken out.
Wow. And here you are now. Feeling
great.
And
here I am. Yeah. I feel amazing.
Wow. What an incredible story. But so, you know, let's just step back a bit to the coaching then, and how all that you've been through and you found, well, it sounds like on that coaching weekend, you found your reason why, your raison d'etre for doing what you wanted to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did things evolve from that to become what you do now in terms of the emoji coach then? How did that come about?
So I started down the road of coaching, and like anyone, when you first start out, you do your training, and when you start out in business, it's slow pace. And to me, you learn more when you're actually out there doing it than you do on your training. And I knew that I had a passion for children. I knew I had a passion, but I was working more with adults, really. And then I suddenly decided that I met up with somebody and we got together to work with children. And I was based a lot in Nottingham, working with children, what have you. And we decided to go separate ways. And I spoke to my web designer and I said, right, can you help me, you know, rebrand and what have you? He said, yeah, no problem, Olivia. He said, the only thing is you've got 24 hours to do it because I'm really busy. And I was like, what?
What?
And he's like, are you saying that can't be done? I went, no. So, and we just, I do honestly believe that having that short time scale really pushed me into doing it. And he was so incredibly helpful. And he said about emoji coaching. And I was like, ooh, I don't know about that. But it grew on me. And I went, hang on a second, I will be the emoji coach. And he said, well, yeah, because you're all about the emotions. You're helping people to express how they feel, helping them to, you know, whilst they feel safe, you're helping them to feel safe whilst doing this and working with families and what you're doing. It's all about the emotions. And I thought, that's amazing. And then I worked with another friend and we created the emojis. Mm-hmm. So created the emojis and then created the tools and it just went from there. And I'm just having an amazing time.
Oh, so you've got books and all sorts now, haven't you? You've got all kinds of things.
Yeah, the emoji chart is a tool to help children express how they feel without finding the words. And there's a tool in there to help them change how they feel also. I wish I'd had that when I was a child, I can tell you. Yeah.
But do you know what? Going back to that, nobody really asked you, did they? How you felt? They just assumed they knew.
That's right. Yeah. I went to see a counsellor. She was really lovely. But they were trying to dig and get to the bottom of what it was that was wrong with me. But I didn't know what was wrong with me, you know? And this is the thing that we're all trying to analyse. We all like to label and find things. Oh, that's what's wrong with me. Oh, I feel better now. I know what's wrong with me.
Yeah.
Whereas you don't need to. It's just about listening to your body, really. But yeah, you're right. Everyone just told me. And they didn't know what to do with me.
Yeah. So you've got all these things there. So do you still work in schools? Do you work one-to-one? How's the work evolved?
So I did work in some schools, but I'm not a quick fix. I'm not a plaster. And because of the situation at the moment with funding, what have you, a lot of people or schools are wanting that quick fix. So if that's the case, I say no. But I work very much on a one-to-one. And I work with families as well. And I work very much on my intuition, because one of the things that was really important to me when I had my surgery in September, I hit a little bit. It's all right, folks. It was just a little bit of a low. It was just the dregs of the barrel coming up, but it did. I hit a little bit of a low again. And what came up for me was that I want to be my true self. And my true self is that I am a healer. I am very much an intuitive coach. When I connect with or talk to parents, when they're telling me about the children, I immediately connect with the beautiful children and young being. And that's, you know, it's, yes, I have tools that I use, but it's just my ability to connect with people on an energetic level, feel their energy, really feel what's going on for them, to be able to help them. So, and that's what came up for me was, hang on a minute, I'm working with these kids and with these people, helping them to be the true selves, but yet I'm not actually coming out and saying how spiritual I am and how intuitive I am And I want to do that.
And you want to do it. And you know, Libby, you're saying that because when you first started off, when we went, if we rewind right back to the start of this, and I was a sensitive child. maybe. Yeah, it's what you're describing now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But other people labelled it sensitive. Yeah,
exactly. And I didn't realise. And so as a child, I would walk into a room and I would feel what was going on in that room and just take it all on. Just take it all on as, you know, as mine. And this is the one thing that these kids are doing, you know, and they don't realise. Quite often they are empaths. And they're just absorbing it and they're acting it out a lot of the time. And so many children are being labelled on not fitting in the box of the educational system. Mm-hmm. So getting into trouble a lot. But a lot of the time they can feel energy and they can feel what's going on. It's no different to if you walk into an office full of people and somebody's in a bad mood, you can feel it.
Yes, you can.
You know?
Yeah.
So if you expand that, and you literally can feel what's going on. And at the moment, it's like I did a Facebook Live this morning recording because at the moment, as I step out, I can even feel it in the house, I can feel the whole planet tense at the moment because they're under pressure, it's building up to Christmas, and I have to really work to clear that and clear myself. And so many people don't have those tools to be able to do that and ground themselves. And I work a lot with children and I help them to ground themselves. I help the parents to give them tools to ground them and to calm them. And it's really important.
Libby, I was going to say there as well, because I can imagine that when you're working with the children as well, I would suggest that the parents get something out of it as well.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I work with parents as well, if they want me to.
If they want to, yeah.
Yeah, if they want me to. But it is important to me to work with the parents because sometimes it can be things that are going on for parents and the children are acting them out. So if we can take the weight off the children's shoulders and I can work with the parents. And also it's helping the parents to cope as well. So if there's something major going on with their child, no, those parents need that support. Those parents need that oxygen mask to help them feel calmer, to then be able to work with the children. Whereas if parents have got all this anxiety going on inside of them or they're getting triggered from their stuff, because that's what happens, you know, as a parent, we get triggered, then that's going to have an effect on the children as well. So I always say to the parents, I am here for you. I will support you. Contact me if you need me. And they do, thankfully, they do.
Well, so you're over in Leeds. So do you work locally? Can you work nationally? Can you work online? I guess you can you?
Yeah. So I have clients in Australia.
Right. Okay. Surprise, surprise. Yes.
Yeah.
There's still that connection there, you know?
Oh, yes. There's still that connection to my lovely Australia. Yes. So, I can work anywhere over Skype. And I also do long distance as well. So if there's anything going on for somebody, like this week, I've done a couple of long distance healings as well. And that works just as well for people. So, yes, I'm face to face. I can work over the telephone, over Skype, over Zoom. Yeah. And right. I do travel as well. So.
Right. Okay. So if people want to find out more about you, how can they do that? And if they want to get in touch, how can they do that?
So my website is theemojicoach.com. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter as The Emoji Coach. The email is libby@theemojicoach.com.
Brilliant. Well, tell you what, it has been absolutely awesome talking to you this afternoon. What an amazing story for people to listen to. And, you know, there are some great stories out there. And where we started from, you know, like you just said, what it took you 48 years, was it, to get to where you've got now? Yeah, but well, yeah. You know, you're just a youngster compared to me. How marvelous is that? Absolutely awesome. A great story. A really big thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
With inspirational guests from across the world, this is Inspire Radio.
With feel-good music by day, relaxing music by night, this is Inspire Radio. Be happy, be inspired.